Welcome back to the Weekly Rundown with Atlas,
the official podcast by Monash International Affairs Society.
We are your hosts, Shania
and Phoebianca.
Hey everyone, it's Friday again.
It's that time of the week again when Shania and I comes back and we give you a rundown of what has happened during the week in the realm of international relations.
Yes. So we might kick it off with having a look at the Nigerian crude oil theft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Nigeria has lost approximately $1 billion in revenue during the first quarter of this year because of crude oil theft, which has also becoming a threat to the country's economy. So just for a little bit of context, Nigeria loses millions of barrels of crude oil every year because of theft, vandalism, and even tapping of crude oil from pipelines owned by oil majors.
Oh, wow. So it's like a common thing.
Yeah, exactly. What I found was that the head of the Nigerian Upstream Petroleum Regulatory Commission said that of the 141 million barrels of oil produced in the first quarter of 2022, about 132 million barrels of oil was actually received at export terminals.
Ooh.
So there's quite a bit of difference there, especially when we're comparing about millions.
Oh my gosh.
So that leaves about 9 million barrels unaccounted for. According to the head, that amounts to a loss in government revenue of about $1 billion in just one quarter. So you can imagine how much of an effect that would have on the country's economy.
Mm-hmm. And I guess this also like displays how poor the security is. If you're going to lose like this many barrels, and also that's a lot of money, huge economic loss for the country.
Exactly. The rate of theft has actually continued to rise in the country, increasing to a daily average of 108,000 barrels in the first quarter of 2022 from 103,000 barrels, which was in 2021. This is despite the country's president's efforts to ensure that oil theft is stopped and even set up dedicated courts to combat the problem. But it hasn't worked.
Oh, so it has not been working.
No, because it's still increased despite him having set up the like separate dedicated courts for this.
That's insane.
So we can imagine that this also has a significant impact on the willingness of investors to invest in this area of the country's economy because of it's so unstable. So they're not going to be willing to invest in it, which will also have the country see longer term negative effects as a result of the increasing rate of oil theft. Because they're not actually getting investors in to kind of reinvigorate their economy.
I think that's crazy. But yeah, definitely something needs to be implemented for this to stop. Because that is a lot of money. And I mean, I had no idea that Nigeria's the main export is probably crude oil in that case. Mm-hmm. So then they're losing out on that opportunity. So,
in the long run, it's having a really significant impact on its economy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can see that you also have another update on the Ukraine-Russia grain deal.
Yeah, so following up on our last episode when we spoke about the grain deal between Ukraine and Russia, which was an effort to ensure global food security, if anyone didn't listen to that episode, which you should if you haven't, the Ukraine ship actually recently left Ukraine and headed to Istanbul and then Lebanon. It was considered a test run, but it makes us hopeful for the potential this deal holds for the future, especially considering all of the Russian attacks at the ports in Ukraine and the regions surrounding it. And I guess the benefit is not only to the global food crisis with this actually being successful, but the shipments will also create jobs and provide money to actually fuel the war effort.
I see. So that's good to hear, I guess, in that one sense. We really hope for peace.
Exactly. I think we do need to revisit the fact that I think when we were looking at it last week's episode, Ukraine definitely did say that brokering this deal, they weren't it had nothing to do with the war. It was more for the sake of global food security that they were doing it, in a sense, is what I got at least.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you, Phoebianca?
Well, Shania, I'm going to cover the US Pelosi visit to Taiwan and sort of what are people saying around the world? What are the different opinions? I mean, I was just talking to my professor actually the other day, and we're saying that, Shania, we are living in a pretty historic time. And I'm not saying it in a very positive way. I'm saying it in a way that is a bit sad that global tensions are definitely present, and it is not going well. There's a lot of tension everywhere, not only with China, US, but there's also some ongoing wars around the world, not only with Russia, Ukraine, but there's a lot that needs to be covered. But all I can say is that the Pelosi visit to Taiwan did not help with the global tension.
Yeah, so, a lot of controversy around that online.
Yeah, a lot. And we're going to dive into it. So Nancy Pelosi, U.S. Congressman, Speaker of the U.S.'s House of Representatives, she visited Taiwan last week, and this was in efforts to, and I quote Pelosi, she said that this was America's stand with Taiwan, and it was an unequivocal statement that America stands with Taiwan. At the end of her trip, she declared that the U.S.'s commitment to Taiwan's democracy was ironclad. So essentially, it was a visit to promote democracy and to pretty much show that the U.S. is on Taiwan's side. Yeah, so obviously the visit was faced with very strong opposition from the People's Republic of China. I'll refer to them as the PRC for short, as it goes against the One China policy or the One China principle, which is officially acknowledged by the UN and the US in 1972. With their joint communique with the PRC, the US acknowledges that all Chinese on either side of the Taiwan Strait maintain there is but one China, and that Taiwan is a part of China and does not challenge that position. So as you can see, Shania, it is a pretty controversial visit because it's pretty much Pelosi representing the US and saying that we're breaking that 1972 statement, and we don't acknowledge that it's a one China policy. We acknowledge that Taiwan is its own independent sovereign state. So I guess the history, the why, I mean, this, you know, certainly quite a lot of layers to this visit. And a lot of players of question here. It goes quite deep, but I think the first thing all of our listeners should know is that China has, they pretty much essentially released a one China principle. It's having the position that there is only one sovereign state under the name of China. So that includes Taiwan. This official, and by the way, Taiwan's official name is called the Republic of China. So that is how it's known officially. So China has historical claims to this principle. And again, I don't want to go into it. There's a lot of history, a lot of controversy, but I encourage all of our listeners, do your own research if you're interested in learning more. So I guess people are asking, why did Pelosi really visit Taiwan? Again, I won't analyze that, but people should do your own research, source different articles, try to understand why Pelosi really visited. But for us, Shania, we're just stating the facts here. I kind of sourced what people are saying around the world, and it's really interesting actually, because we have people who are totally for it, saying that Pelosi's visit was needed to show that the US was promoting democracy and that they had a very strong standpoint. Others were really just full on condemning it, saying that it doesn't contribute to anything that is happening to the world right now positively. But I'll start off with Joe Biden, actually, because this was an interesting one, Shania. I don't know if you saw this. This was pretty hot on Twitter. President Joe Biden himself publicly admitted that the U.S. military felt the trip was, quote, not a good idea right now. Now, this is mainly because they said that it undermines the U.S.'s own efforts in trying to strengthen relations with the Pacific nations. So we all know that the US is trying to strengthen relations with Australia, which Australia is trying to strengthen their relations with the Pacific Islands, et cetera, et cetera. I think the US is just trying to get more influence over that area. So obviously they don't really want to upset the Pacific Islands, who are in strong collaboration with China. Yeah, so I thought that was pretty interesting. And we have an opinion from Thomas Friedman. He's an author in New York Times columnist. He described that Pelosi's adventure was, quote, utterly reckless, dangerous, and irresponsible, arguing that Taiwan will not be more secure or prosperous because of a purely symbolic visit. Because apparently Pelosi, she has a midterm election coming up in November. So people are saying that, because she's apparently 82 years old. So they're saying that she's expected to lose her role as speaker. So they're saying that maybe that's her one last hurrah. That's what some people are saying. But then we also have opinions from the actual Taiwanese people. So I sourced this quite interestingly because I was able to read Chinese and I sourced this from the Taiwan news. And apparently no one is actually really bothered. They don't really take any side. I feel like they're kind of chilling. So they seem to be pretty chill about it. They weren't taking any side in particular. They were saying that all they really want is peace and that the Pelosi visit did not bother them. In fact, when China was testing their missiles, that didn't bother them because they're used to it. So I feel like it's pretty interesting that the whole world is kind of freaking out about it. But then if you ask the people who are actually involved, they don't really mind.
Exactly. I guess that's what really matters in a sense, you know, as long as they aren't the ones getting hurt. But it's interesting because when I was having a bit of a read about this, I read that China had a bit of a more like aggressive response to it and that they like expanded their military exercises within the region, like the Taiwanese Strait. Following that, I saw a quote from Pelosi saying that she said that her visit was worth it. And she even described China's president as a scary bully, which was quoted, by the way.
Big words to say about another country's president.
Definitely. And I think I even read that her trip actually set back some of Biden's efforts within the region. Like you said, he's trying to strengthen relationships. Yeah. But it actually ended up setting back relations within Asia because, you know, while they expanded their military exercises and maybe heightened it a little bit within the region, I think there are two sides to it. So countries like Japan and Australia within the region who are allied with the US, criticizing China's response, while other security partners within the region such as South Korea or India kind of stayed quiet because they saw the US's visit as provocation almost, kind of, you know.
100%. Yeah. Exactly. 100%. Spot on with that, Shania. Like, it's really interesting because the whole world, everyone's eyes is on this because everyone is either seeing, like, who is being more provocative? Who is making the first move? And I honestly just think, I mean, it looks like both sides have their own ideas of who's being provoked, of who is being aggressive. I honestly just think better communication, guys.
Yeah. I saw a quote actually from a director at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies in Malaysia. His name was Shariman Lockman. He said that most Southeast Asian countries will view the US as having provoked China's entirely predictable overreactions, was the exact quote that he gave. So it kind of gives us that other perspective of it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'll add on to that, China's ambassador to Australia, I found a quote by Mr. Xiao Qian. He said that Pelosi's visit to Taiwan makes it clear that it was the US who took the first provocative actions to change and undermine the status quo. It looks like we have a whole range of opinions from different sides. And I guess all we can really say to everyone who's listening and tuning in is that this is a complex issue. There's a lot of layers to it. And we're just trying to give you guys a very short, quick rundown. Anything that you guys hear from this podcast today, we encourage you to go do more research and don't only go to one source, go to all sources, like what Shania and I are trying to do.
Exactly. And I think it's also, this is a really great example of countries kind of adapting a realist point of view. Like they're kind of doing what's best for their own country.
Yes. 100%. Gotta,
staying quiet or whether they're putting out a comment, like condemning another nation, they're doing what's best for their own interests.
Exactly. And what is so interesting right now, Shania, is that we're living in this digital age where everything is out there. Everything's out there for everyone to hear and to form their own opinions. I think we'll end it there. Big episode today, but we hope you guys enjoy it as usual.
And don't forget to tune back in for our next episode of the Weekly Rundown.
Yes. See you guys soon. Bye.